And good morning. Welcome to KBOO's Radio Zine. I'm Jim Thompson, and in this segment, we're going to talk about a brand new organization. Not brand new, they've been around just a few years, but they're pretty new, called Hands to Hearts International. And with me today is the founder and executive director, if I got the title right.
You got it.
And Laura Peterson. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
I'd like to set the stage just for a little background, just to frame this discussion a little bit, with a few quotes from their literature. These are things that are available on their website and their brochures. And one is a quote that says, this is from the UN Declaration of the Rights of the Child. It says, all children have the right to affection, love, and understanding. Okay, I like that. And this from the World Health Organization, the best predictor of growth after socioeconomic variables was the love and affection the caregiver gave to the child.
Yeah.
I like that one, too.
It's like pretty powerful.
You know what that reminds me of? Reminds me of that crazy experiment that they did, the guy did with the rhesus monkeys.
The Harlow monkeys, yeah.
Harlow.
Yeah.
Harlow. Yeah, the wire mother.
Yep.
And the cloth mother.
Yeah. Babies would cling to the wire mother because it, or babies would cling to the cloth mother, even if it didn't have food, just because it was nurturing and felt good.
And following up on that is, this is from, again, from the World Health Organization, that the lack of personalized care during the early years of life has a devastating effect on child's health, growth, personality, adjustment, and cognitive capacity. Finally, from Kofi Annan, study after study has taught us that there is no tool for development more effective than the empowerment of women.
Yeah.
Good morning, Laura. Welcome.
Good morning. Good morning. And I'll finish that quote because Kofi Annan goes on to say there's no tool more effective for economic development and community than the empowerment of women. No tool more effective than getting education for future generations, for improving infant health and reducing maternal mortality, and preventing HIV/AIDS. So, pretty potent.
Potent stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
As the old saying goes, you know, as the twig is bent, so grows the tree.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
yeah.
So, what does all this have to do with you?
So, yeah.
What is your organization, and what do you do?
Great. Hands to Hearts International is a program that works in developing countries to train and then employ women who haven't otherwise had any sort of educational opportunities or job opportunities, training them in early childhood development and particularly the importance of bonding and attachment, and then hiring them into orphanages that we partner with to act as nannies, providing specialized care for babies who are otherwise laying untouched, unloved. You know, their little brain's not developing in the first few years of their life while they're waiting for adoptive families.
Okay, so your purpose then is to just improve their chances in life later on?
Yeah, 90% of the brain development for children happens between 0 and 3. And that's when bonding and attachment happens as well. So all the foundation for your brain development for your entire life is established when you're between 0 and 3. So if you only have a very small foundation of learning at that time, of not learning, not having much interaction with people and not having different kinds of interactions of different colors and different people and different, you know, just different stimulus that are, you know, our kids have normally. The brain, you know, all the little synapses don't connect and the foundation is pretty small to build on. So to expand upon that later in life, it kind of, you know, the pyramid has to be the pointy side up. So you're setting the very bottom of the foundation there of what they're going to build on for the rest of their life. And it can only be as big as the foundation. So important to set that, and that's what we're working on, as well as bonding and attachment, which is, it seems like such a normal, simple thing that every human would bond and attach, but it's actually a learned skill, just like language. So if a child doesn't learn to bond and attach with a consistent, safe, nurturing caregiver, be it a parent or an alternative caregiver or grandparent or whoever that is for the child, before the age of about 2 or 3 years old, their chances of doing so later are pretty limited. And that can look, like a lot of children I worked with for years and years in the state systems of foster care and failed adoptions and residential care with serious mental health problems.
Well, Hands to Hearts International. I mean, you're here in Portland, right?
Yeah, based right here in Portland.
Based here in Portland, but you're operating internationally.
Yes.
And I understand that you had a successful project in India?
Extremely, yeah. Extremely successful.
Okay. And you were... Well, you tell the story. I can tell it secondhand. I've read the brochures and your website, but you know, I'm sure you can do a better job. So go ahead.
After about a year of just kind of putting all the elements in place to start a new nonprofit, we launched in India. Was our first program in Southeast India on the tsunami struck zone, which people that rings a bell, puts it on a map for people.
Right.
So we partnered with an adoption agency here in Portland that adopts from a variety of countries around the world to families here in the U.S., particularly in the Northwest. And we worked with one of their partner orphanages in that area of India, and I went over with a researcher from Utah State University, a PhD researcher in early childhood development, and she put together a training curriculum for us on early childhood development in the spheres of social skills development, language development, cognitive development, and physical development.
And who was this? This was
Dr. Vonda Jump.
Vonda Jump.
Yeah, she's on our website. She works at the Early Intervention Research Institute at Utah State University. So she designed our curriculum for us, obviously an expert in the field, and led our first trainings over in India with this orphanage. So while we were there, we trained 40 women in those four arenas of child development, as well as the significant importance of attachment. And one of the things they learned was infant massage. It's a real simple, safe way that that parents bond with their babies. I mean, I think most parents normally, you know, are washing their kids in little tubs and are brushing their hair and doing little buttons and rubbing their back and all those things. But babies in orphanages, and babies here get infant massage. Lots of parents study that here. There's a foundation here in Portland that teaches infant massage.
Well, I've never studied it, but to me it seems instinctive.
Pretty normal. Yeah. I think most parents kind of do it naturally.
You want to.
Yeah. And so that was one of the skills we taught the women, to help them build the relationships with the children specifically that they'd be nannies for.
Okay. And have you identified that that lack of physical contact as an important factor in childhood development?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
There's a lot of research from the Touch Research Institute at University of Miami showing children in NICU units of the neonatal intensive care units who've had, you know, there because of some sort of pretty serious health problem, is children, babies who had massage versus babies who didn't have massage, you know, were able to leave significantly earlier from the hospital and, you know, had tremendous developmental gains during the time of the massage. And then those gains lasted after the child was discharged. I mean, it was like, I think, a $7,000 to $10,000 savings per child of them being able to leave the intensive care unit that much earlier and be with their family and be a part of their normal life. So, I mean, there's a ton of research showing that, you know, infant massage and just the simple act of touching is so important, which any parent knows. Your child falls down and bumps their knee and we kiss it, you know. You rub it and you blow on it and you put more germs, but it's a human contact.
Right. I've seen that in neonatal care, especially with the preemies and the, incubators.
Drug-affected children.
Very often the hospitals will have, you know, volunteer positions. People will just take the babies out and hold them,
mm-hmm.
and just give them that kind of contact.
Yeah.
And what a wonderful volunteer kind of work.
Yeah, there've been a lot of women who've been very excited about that.
And men.
And men, yes, and men, yeah.
So orphanage in India.
Yes.
And where in India?
Chennai.
How many kids are there?
At that particular orphanage, there were about 35 babies, anywhere from a couple days old to about 4 years old. And then the training included women from other orphanages as well. So we opened the training to have people where we weren't directly working with that orphanage, but they could come and get the training so they could take back the new knowledge and skills. And so our initial, you know, that one trip reached about 400 kids.
And now you set up this training, as the way I'm reading it, is you're not just training them to care for the kids, but you're also training them to provide training.
Yeah, we trained those 40 women to care for children.
Yeah.
And then we also train a trainer so that the training lives on. So right now we still have a woman there who's employed, and she continues to go to different orphanages and give away this training, where we can't hire women at every single orphanage to fill the gaps in care, but we can improve the level of care that these women know how to give and that they can give to the children they're serving.
So you're out planting seeds, so to speak.
Planting seeds, yeah. Yeah, because there's no standards of caregivers don't have to have any sort of background or education to take the job. There's no standards of training for a caregiver. And our training's pretty simple and pretty, you know, extremely cost-effective. I mean, gosh, we're giving it away. And, you know, in the U.S., where anybody who's looking to do anything, you know, you're looking to have a child or you're going to pretty much do anything here, we get heaps of book and there's magazine articles and there's TV things and there's things on the web where we can research like crazy. But, you know, some of these women, A, weren't able to read or write, and not because they're stupid, but because they've just never been given the opportunity. And also, there's not, you know, reams and reams of books for these women in villages to pick up and learn about early childhood development, about the simple stuff that most of us kind of see little blips on the news about, you know, the latest child development of, you know, letting your child cry versus picking them up and holding them, and, you know, kind of all the things that are in debate in our society all the time, where we're indirectly inundated with information. They don't have that. So it really builds a solid foundation for them to understand things that are kind of simple, but not if they're not spelled out.
Okay, that makes sense to me. This recent trip to India, that was your first real project, is that right?
Yes, that was our launch.
That was your launch, but because you're a very new organization.
Yeah.
Started barely in 2004?
Yeah, very much, the very end of 2004.
And it sounds like you actually quit your day job?
Yeah, I did. Look back on that and question that, but yes, that was what happened.
That's quite a leap. That's got to be, it takes a lot of courage to do something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And any regrets?
No, not at all.
You'd do it again?
Oh, for this I would. You know, if you're going to start something, you know, any business, but particularly a nonprofit, where you're going to be, you know, we don't have a product to sell. You know, I tell people some days, I'm like, I'd do better selling dog biscuits on the internet. You know, if you're going to quit your day job and just really take this on, you better be not only extremely passionate about what you're doing, but you better know what you're doing, know the field, know the people who know the field. You know, I can't know it all, but I surround myself with a team of just, you know, experts.
Let me ask, how did you do it? Because I really want to know. How did you do it? I mean, did you have a business plan, financing? Did you take loans? I don't know.
Yeah, I didn't. Started with kind of an idea and a team of people who were behind me, you know, a team of people, of friends and people, associates that I knew, of kind of, yeah, this really makes sense. And so just started, you know, I kind of had a little bit of money in savings, and I've been able to do a lot of contract work, so I'm able to support myself in other ways without having the quote-unquote day job. So it's not that I've not been working that entire time, because I still do work. This doesn't financially support me, even after a year and a half. So, A, you should have a backup. You know, you need a financial income at some point in time.
Right.
So I was lucky to have a variety of different contract positions I could do kind of as I needed to pick up work. And then surrounded myself with people who knew the different things I needed to know about getting a business plan done. That was a painful process for me. putting together a financial plan, still working on it. You know, and all these things are constantly, you know, works in progress. You know, you put together a financial plan, and then you put together a new financial plan, and then you know, you modify your business plan, because we were looking at going to, you know, maybe this country first, and then it ended up with the partnership that this was, you know, India was where we started. And you build, you know, building a board of advisors, building a board of directors. You know, my mom asked me last year about this time. She's like, what do you do on an average day? And I said, you know, I have tea with a lot of people. I go and drink tea, and I pick their brains, and I, you know, meet people. And doors just kind of start opening if you just keep knocking and keep knocking.
And of course, one of the aspects of this was, well, of course, not only your own personal finances, but to finance the organization.
Mm-hmm.
I saw on the website that you had at one point a goal of $80,000, and you... Did you meet that? Did you ever make that?
No. That was kind of my dream last summer. I was on a kick that I was going to go raise. I'd never raised money before, not in this way. I mean, I've gotten contracts and whatnot in other ways for companies, but I had a dream last summer I was going to raise $80,000, and full of optimism, enthusiasm, and just you can't stop me attitude. you know, I relentlessly pursued that, and we didn't meet that goal. But the reality is a lot of things started happening at that, you know, out of that kind of pursuit, that hot pursuit that I was in. And, you know, then we look at the financial plan again, and we look at the business model again, and we rework and retune. It's like, okay, so you really want to make this happen? Yes, I do. Okay, so what's the baseline? What can we make it happen with? And we really whittled it down. And then I had a number of kind of smaller grants, you know, a couple $5,000 grants or $1,000 from this organization, you know, and we did the whole trip to India. The direct costs on that were like about $15,000. You know, it's amazing what you can do when you just aren't willing to say, I give up. You know, we've done an amazing amount with very, very little resources.
Thank you. And for those of you just tuning in, this is KBOO, Morning Radio Zine. And I'm Jim Thompson. We're talking with Laura Peterson from the HHI, which is...
Hands to Hearts International.
Hands to Hearts International, organized to train women to help orphaned kids around the world. And you just got back with a successful project in India.
Mm-hmm.
And what is your next project?
For this first year of operations, we're going to have two sites in the country of India. So I'll be returning to India the very end of July, and the woman who is already trained as a trainer in India will join me at a second site that I visited while I was there this winter, and we will be setting up at that orphanage. We've already started, you know, our contracts with them and getting them ready for that. You know, met all the staff and did some observation there, and so we'll go back. They have about 45 children in their care. And, you know, they have caregivers, but to be able to, you know, give them this kind of specialized training and to give them, you know, to be able to have more caregivers so that babies have a nanny. Every baby has a nanny care. It's going to make a huge difference.
And well, what's the time frame for this?
The trip itself will be it'll be about a 3-week trip. I'll be gone from roughly about the end of July, the first couple weeks of August. And then we're also looking about, you know, year two, we'll be in a different country. And we'll set up two sites in that country. So the idea is to roll out a new site about every 6 months.
Okay, because that was my next question, is what are your long-term plans?
Mm-hmm. That's it, is to, in the first 3 years, I want to work in 3 different countries, 2 sites per country, and to really try the model. I mean, you know, we're really piloting right now, like finding out culturally what works in this country. You know, there's cultural pieces, there's political pieces, there's... different situations of how orphanages are run, you know, government or private.
Language barriers?
Language barriers for sure. But, you know, we work with people who are able to do all the translation with us and for us. So that hasn't been too big of a problem.
Okay.
But a lot of cultural differences and, you know, and different ways that countries operate the orphanage system. And so the idea of doing 3 different countries for the first 3 years will give us enough of an idea of, you know, what works, what doesn't work, and what did we find, you know, is culturally going to be a barrier at this place, in this country versus this country. So by the end of 3 years, the hope is, and doing research along with what of our program is the most effective for these babies' health. Like, we'll be measuring baby health along the timeline here. So...
Well, that was going to be one of my next questions is, do you have any way, anything in place to try to measure your success?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And that's why I hired Dr. Vonda Jump at Utah State University to come with us.
Okay.
So she not only designed our curriculum, but she's setting up a long-term research program to study the health of these children before and then after having these services.
So you will have follow-up.
We'll have follow-up data, and we'll be in, you know, maintain our relationship with Utah State University and have research ongoing that can really show demonstrable results, measurable outcomes of child health, of, you know, fewer days sick, maybe not needing to take medication as long if they do catch something, easier to soothe. I mean, there'll be developmental markers and health markers that we'll keep track of, because I'm committed to, you know, not just doing something that sounds like a really cool idea, but I really want to have results out of that. So then hopefully by the end of 3 years is we'll have enough information, we'll have enough experience that we can really sit down and design our model that we can really just go and give it away. That, you know, the country of Colombia could say, hey, you know, we want to use this model. It's very simple. It's very cost effective. And we could go train it to a country's government and then they could go distribute it. You know, so the model's really designed to be replicable and just, you know, get to the point where we can go give it away and they can implement it themselves.
I'd like to switch focus from the you know, business aspect of things to the more personal things, go back
okay.
that way a little bit. It seems like you just had contact with some whole lot of people in a far-off country, and it seems like you probably have stories to tell. Do you have a favorite story, a favorite person or that you met in your travels?
Yeah. There was a, oh gosh, I had to pick which one. Vera Lakshmi, her picture is on the homepage of our website. There's a picture of a woman kissing the foot of a baby. It's beautiful. You've seen that one. It's on our brochure as well. She's about 27 years old. She has two children of her own that she's raising. And she was the one I said, when I said there's, you know, women there who, you know, have never been taught to read or write. That would be Vera Lakshmi. She had 2 years of education given to her because in India, as in many developing countries, education is there, but they have to pay for uniforms and books, which is probably like a whopping $10 a month. But families can't afford that, especially if they can have the child at home doing work and, you know, they're pretty hand-to-mouth existence. So Vera Lakshmi only had 2 years of education, so she couldn't read or write. But in our training, you know, we did, you know, some lecture style and lots of interactive stuff, and then the women worked in work groups and we played games and all that. But and there was some reading and writing to be done, and her work group would always just make that work for her. And she got it. I mean, she just got the model. Like, it's not rocket science. I mean, she just has that internal parental instinct and just was so wonderful with the kids. And you can see it in that picture. I mean, it makes your heart melt. And then a politician came at the end to see kind of what we had done, a major politician in that area of India, and was just stunned at how much we had done in such a short time. I mean, the training's like 4 days long. And we work with the orphanage for a couple of weeks, but the training itself is only 4 days. And what these women had learned and just how much you could see had changed in such a short time, kind of simple things. And we told the politician, we said, you know, anybody can do this. I said, you know, and I said, Vera Lakshmi is this beautiful, brilliant, intelligent, powerful woman, but she's only been given 2 years of education. She can't read or write, and she can do this job because she had never had a job before. She couldn't get one. So this is her first job. She's doing good.
Well, that's a great story. And you said her picture is on your website.
Yes.
And where is your website?
www.handstoharts.org.
www.handstoharts.
Yep.
That's all one word.
All together. All spelled out.
Handstoharts.org.
That's it.
Okay.
Yeah. There's new stuff up there all the time.
Okay. Do you have any other contact information?
The contact information is on the web. Emails coming to me can go to info@handstoharts.org, and I'll get that. And then there's phone number and address online. Anybody wants that?
Yes, and I have a brochure that I think we can leave with the front desk if anybody wants to call the station later.
Of course. Or they shoot me an email. The brochure is also something you can download online, or if someone sends me an email, I'm happy to mail one off to them. And I'm getting it today, so I'm kind of excited, getting the film that we did in India. It's been edited here and boiled down, and so we're going to have this very beautiful, about 6-minute piece of, you know, showing the women and the children and the actual, this is what it looks like. A film will be put up on the website probably about the first or second week of June. Probably about the second week of June.
Okay, well, we'll have to keep our eyes open for that. I certainly will.
Yeah, great.
That's very interesting.
So do you have anything that we haven't discussed that you'd like to say, anything that we missed in your favorite topics? Or
I guess two things is that, you know, people have always said, you know, if I make the difference in the life of just one child. And I think we've grown beyond that. I think as Americans, we're a pretty privileged class and group. And I think anybody here in this country has the difference to make, is the power to make a difference for hundreds, if not thousands, of children. And you know, Americans are the most philanthropic and giving community on the planet, I believe. And so just for people to find out, you know, how do they make a difference? It's just you pick and go. You know, this Hands to Hearts International is what I've done. This is my expression of making a difference in the world, what I've chosen. And I would just encourage people to find your passion and your talents locally, abroad, wherever it is for you, and just go with wild abandon.
Well, yeah. I think you're proof that it can be done.
I hope so. I hope so. Yeah. Thank you. Thanks so much.
And that was Laura Peterson with Hands to Hearts International. And this is KBOO Radio Zine. And till then, I'm Jim Thompson.
And we have an announcement related to the interview that you just heard. The children of Corvallis Waldorf School invite you to attend their Children for Children concert and silent auction at 7 p.m. next Friday, June 2nd, at the Odd Fellows Hall in Corvallis. This benefit supports the orphan children served by Hands to Hearts International. 100% of the proceeds raised during the event will go to support new nannies for the children at the SKB Orphanage in South India. Tickets are $5 per person and $10 per family and can be purchased at the door. To learn more about Hands to Hearts International and this event, visit www.handstoharts.org or call 503-936-5574. That's 503-936-5574. You're listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up this morning on the Friday Radio Zine, Lisa Loving speaks with local writer Ariel Gore, founder of Hip Mama Magazine. She's the author of the new novel, The Traveling Death and Resurrection Show. And at 10:30, Pat McGuire will be here for Boneheads and Bigots. And then at 11 on Democracy Now!, the topic is the yesterday's Enron verdicts, and guests include journalist Greg Palast. It's all coming up here on KBOO Portland.
He's America's most censored journalist. He uncovered how George Bush stole the election in 2000 and again in 2004. Now he's ready to show you the whole armed madhouse, from stolen ballot boxes to the war on terror as profit center. KBOO 90.7 FM and the Portland Alliance brings you Greg Palast on Monday, June 5th at First Unitarian Universalist Church at 1011 Southwest 12th Avenue. Admission $8 to $15. Program begins at 7 p.m. Doors open at 6:30. Hosted by Dave Mazza and includes special guest Air America's Tom Hartman. Don't miss Greg's reading from his new book, Armed Madhouse, Dispatches from the Front Lines of the Class War. Copies on sale and signed at the program. For more information, call 503-239-4991.
The May KVU board meeting will be postponed until June 3rd, 10 to 2 p.m., held at KVU. We look forward to seeing you there. A special board meeting will be held May 27th, 10 to 2 at KVU. On the agenda will be web development and a closed executive session to cover a personnel issue. Again, the May KVU board meeting will be postponed until June 3rd. We look forward to seeing you there.